My name is Jordan Kurland. I live in San Francisco, California. I run a company called Brilliant Corners Artist Management. We manage bands, including Death Cab for Cutie, The Postal Service, She and Him, Ori Moi, Soccer Mommy, Best Coast, The New Pornographers, and a few more. I'm also a partner in a Bay Area-based festival and live events production company called Noise Pop. We've been producing an independent music festival since 1993, and for 11 years produced the now-defunct Treasure Island Music Festival. And I am a pretty obsessive vinyl collector.
And, of course, your company is named after a Thelonious Monk record, right?
Correct, exactly. But my company and my son are named after Thelonious Monk.
Ah.
My son Theo, his full name is Thelonious.
Oh, cool. That's great. Well, at least you didn't name him Riverside. You know, it could have been worse.
Or Oren, or, yeah.
Right.
Although I did know Oren.
Oh.
When he was alive. Yeah, and his grandnephew owns a great record store in San Francisco called Tunnel Records, actually.
Oh.
So,
let's talk about your vinyl. Now, when I met you, you had just bought an Axios cartridge from Transfiguration.
Yeah, which unfortunately broke. It broke, and the guy who was building those cartridges passed away. So I've been unable to. I was unable to replace it or get it, you know, and it broke without, you know, it wasn't even fixable. So
yeah, I mean, it can be rebuilt, but there are other people can rebuild it if you want to have it rebuilt.
Yeah.
But that's all another story. So what are you using now?
I have it, Alira Delos.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, you know, our mutual friend David Hyman.
Yep.
You know, picked that up for me, and Sterling Trail came and installed it for me. So, I'm nowhere on the level of those guys in terms of the audiophile. I think, you know, for me, or yourself, I have a nice system, but I'm not crazy. I spend my money on records.
Yeah. You mean you don't have $1 million worth of turntables sitting in your house, which is what I have now?
No.
I'm reviewing.
No, oh, my God.
I don't own, I mean, wow. I'm reviewing. I have one half million dollar turntable and two $250,000 turntables. And they sound really good.
I'm sure. No, I have a VIP Classic turntable, I believe is what it is, and I have I have Harvest, speakers, and they're on stands. You know, it sounds great. And
that's
then
nice. Yep.
You know, my office, I have Macintosh stuff, which I love how Macintosh sounds. You know, I have Analog. I have their anniversary system that came out in like 2008.
Right. So what I want to ask you is, when the whole CD thing happened, you were at that point still buying records. You were a jazz fan.
I definitely dipped in and out of buying records. So I grew up from a very early age buying records. At age 6 or 7, I owned every Kiss record. You know, and then I didn't. You know. And then my musical obsession really began again at age 10 with The Who, and I would travel. I grew up in the Chicago area, and I would, once I was old enough to drive, I would drive around to, record fairs and try to buy Who imports and vinyl. I mean, vinyl imports and bootlegs. So that's what really started. And, I'd buy some other records, too. And then I did get into CDs and stopped buying records. I bought very few records for a very long time. And then probably my mid-20s, when I felt settled enough here in San Francisco, I bought a turntable and started buying records again. I would say the obsessive nature of my record collecting really is, but it's been with me my whole life, but I really started again over the last 10 years or so.
You and everybody else. What's going on now is it's insane what's going on now. It's just...
I was buying records along the way. I'd go on the road. I'd be on the road with my clients, and I hit a record store, buy a few records, but it wasn't the type of collecting, or obsessive collecting that I've been doing.
So what is it?
Yeah.
What do you say it is that causes this? I mean, I'm the same way. I don't need any more records, but I'm still looking for records.
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah, of course. No, I keep telling myself I'm not going to buy any more records until I put all my records away that I bought. And I think, you know, I like the tactile nature of it. I like having them be around. I like them just being around me. You know, look, I know that streaming is way more convenient, and there's now some services that, you know, streaming sounds really great on. You know, but I still like the idea of, you know, having to be very intentional with the decisions about what I'm going to play. You know, committing in a deeper way to a listening experience with a full album. Staying close to the turntable and being present to know when, even if I'm reading and not, you know, totally paying attention, I still have to know when, you know, when the side ends. I like all those things, and I like being able to hold something. And I think, you know, as far as like older records, I just love, you know, there's something about being connected to the history of that, you know, of that tactile thing that's in my hands.
Yeah, I still think I like streaming. I've got a really good DAC, and I do Tidal with MQA and Cobuz, and they both sound good.
Yeah.
But the records still sound better to me in a fundamental way. So.
Yep. And, you know, look, I mean, another part of it is I just have a collector's mentality, right? So if I go in, I go in, and, you know, I've been with that. Never, I mean, records have been the lifelong, you know, dipping in and out of collecting thing. But, you know, I've collected art, I've collected wine, you know. But nothing like on the same level of intentionality as this, you know, where, you know, I learn, you know. It's really fun, you know, and I feel like it gets expensive, but it's a hell of a lot less expensive than other habits.
Yeah, and it's not like wine where you buy an expensive bottle of wine, you drink it, and then you pee it out, and you got nothing left. I mean, I never. Yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of streaming that's too expensive for me, actually.
Yeah, that's true, but yes. Yeah, so I think that's it, but I just, you know, I love, I mean, as far as sound, I do love the warmth of it. I you know, obviously it gets annoying when you know, buy a used record and it's crackling or static, but I love that too, like the imperfect nature of it, you know? So I just, it's really, you know, it's really, I think that's it.
Have you
know,
been buying any of the Tone Poet Blue Notes? Those are incredible.
Yeah, I have almost all the, I think the only Tone Poet I have, there's one of the Hutcherson ones I missed out on, I'm waiting for that to be reissued because it's very expensive, and I know it's coming because I talked to.
And these are better than the originals, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree too. I mean, I have a hard time sometimes if I have some records, I just keep whatever the best version is. But you know, with Blue Notes, if I have an original or an early pressing, and then I get, you know, they put a Tone Poet out, you know, I have a hard time getting rid of the original. And I know that's one way to thin down my create space and thin down my collection. It's like, you know, do I need two or three different pressings of a record? Probably not, you know? But it's, you know, that's something I'm grappling with. I'm doing better about not needing the Japanese pressing and an original pressing, for example, but the Tone Poet stuff, it gets a little more complicated for me.
Yeah, well, if I have an original Blue Note, I've got a bunch of them. I can't sell them because I just like having them, and I know when I eventually do sell them, they'll just be worth more at the end. Those are not going to go down in value. Those are like currency.
I know they're just going up in value actually. So, yeah.
Japanese pressings are another whole other issue because as well pressed as they are, and they are probably the best quality records pressed, the sources they get are not necessarily good sources, and they have very unusual EQ choices. They listen differently, and so they tend to devalue the bass and turn up the treble. And I think part of it is they live in close quarters, and the bass is what leaks through to everybody's apartment, and it creates problems. That's my theory. It could be wrong.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting theory. I buy your theory.
do you find that you'll visit people and they have a wall of records and you look through them and there's not one record you've ever heard of, and it's like, how can this happen? And that you realize there are so many different genres of music that.
No, I think that's pretty rare for me. Just I think in terms of people's, I mean, you know, in terms of people's homes I've gone into, you know, or that I know, and obviously I have the good fortune of working around music for a living. Like, I do not have a great working knowledge about a lot of genres. You know, I don't have a great working knowledge about classical. I don't have a great working knowledge about country music. But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, moments when, you know. Yeah, I don't know that I've had that experience, to be honest.
I mean, I have people who collect Japanese psych pop.
Right.
It's a whole subgenre.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I've gotten into some of it. I didn't think I would like it, but I do like it. That's unfortunate now, there's a lot more records I have to try to buy.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that's interesting about, like, the whole reissue boom, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes there's a reissue of a undiscovered record or a lost album, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is really cool, I want to get it. And sometimes you realize, like, these things were undiscovered for a reason.
Right.
You know, like, they're not great. Like, there's better stuff. And some people are complete, like you're saying, like, it's a genre and people are completists. But, you know, there's a lot of spiritual jazz reissues coming right now, like the lost, you know, record from 1981 or 1975. And some of it's great. And some of it's like, yeah, it's pretty good. But, like, I don't need to buy it just because, you know, it was lost of an artist, some, you know, obscure artist from Detroit that I never heard of. Like, there's better stuff in that genre. You know?
Yeah,
so
I agree.
I have a hard time with that. I don't have a hard time, but
I have a hard time when they open the vaults up and release unreleased material from artists. And the reason why it wasn't released to begin with is because it wasn't that great. And then you dilute the greatness in people's minds because they get to hear the artist when they want it.
Released.
Yeah, I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah, I concur with that for sure.
So, what was the last record you bought? Do you remember?
I don't know for sure the last record I bought. I mean, the most recent trip to Tunnel Records, for example, I got the latest, you know, Spiritual Jazz 13, you know, Spiritual Jazz Now releases. There's a volume one and two. I did buy the, just looking because I have them still right here, the Ecstatic Music of Alice Coltrane. I bought, which is, you know, reissued from a couple years ago. I bought an original pressing of Smog, The Doctor Came at Dawn.
Uh-huh.
Jackie McQueen, A Fickle Sonnet, and Jackie McQueen and Company, and David Axelrod, Heavy Axe, 90s repress, and Melvin Sparks, I'm Funky Now.
What did you think? Did you get Floating Points and Pharoah Sanders? Did you get that record?
I haven't gotten the vinyl yet. I'm actually waiting. I keep bringing up Tunnel Records, but I'm waiting for Ben at Tunnel to get it in. He's holding one for me. I think it's cool. I think it's a nice mood. Yeah.
I love that
record. I listened to it. Yeah. I do too. It's cool. You know, could have not been very good.
It lowers your blood pressure. It lowers my blood pressure.
Yeah.
And every time that little riff comes in that he's playing, you know, if your system goes low enough, when he lets up on the bass, on the pedal of the piano, you hear it, the release of the pedal. And then each one of those little arpeggios is like a breath, and you get used to that breath coming in. I just find that record mesmerizing.
Yeah, no, I do too. No, it's a beautiful record. Yeah, Ryan's made me check in with him and see if he got it in yet. But I've been listening to it. I pronounce it Qobuz, Qobuz, that streaming service.
Yeah, I use Qobuz. I have Qobuz, Tidal, and Spotify also. I just have all of them.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. But I've been listening to that on Qobuz. And that's been great. And I really like, I mean, there's some, you know, I don't buy a ton, like, I'm not, you know, I'm definitely one of those people that think, you know, most of the great jazz records were made a long time ago, but there have been some interesting jazz records, you know, in the last few years.
Yeah.
I do think Sons of Kemet.
Have you heard any of the ones on Rare Noise Records, the Italian guys?
I don't know, I may have.
Jamie Saft and Steve Swallow, Steve Swallow, of course, but Jamie Saft, and that's interesting things on that label, and well recorded, too.
Yeah, interesting. All right, I'll check it out. Yeah, I don't know those. I mean, I've been, you know, some stuff that, you know, kind of comes to mind in that range is, you know, the Universal, Micaiah McRaven, Universal Beings, has a really great record on International Anthem's putting out some interesting stuff.
I don't know that label. International Anthem?
Yeah, they're based out of Chicago, and it's, you know, I haven't bought everything, but it's mostly jazz, but it also has some, you know, some more experimental or, you know, kind of like soul or funk. But,
and it's younger artists? It's newer?
Yeah, I believe, I'm not sure if they're all younger artists, but, you know, I haven't done a deep dive. I just, another record store here in San Francisco, which is great, called Originals Vinyl, they're mostly used, and they get some of this label stuff in, and everything I bought has been good.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. Unfortunately, you turned me on to another label I never heard of, which is very bad, because then I'll have to have some. Worst things have happened.
I understand. Well, you just did the same to me. I had to return the favor.
That's right. Thanks a lot, pal. Yeah. So, yeah, have you heard any of the Electric Recording Company reissues?
Yeah, I own two.
They're, do you like that sound? I think they sound really great. Not everybody likes them, but I like them.
I do. I mean, I'm not that, like, I bought Everybody Digs Bill Evans because, you know, I didn't own any of the Electric Audio, and I was able to buy that right off the bat, you know, right when they released it, and that is my second favorite Bill Evans album.
It is?
My favorite Bill Evans.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it has my favorite Bill Evans song, Peace Teeth. And then I somehow missed the memo when they released Brilliant Corners, and I paid that on, I bought that on the secondary market. It was very expensive, of course.
That came out good too. That came out really good.
Yeah. But I'm like,
there's some crazy.
That's not my favorite Monk record, but it's, you know, it is one of my favorite Monk records,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Obviously, given my company name, I had to buy it.
Do you have that two record Riverside Live in Europe that came out like in 65?
Yep, I do.
That's one of the first Monk records I ever heard, because when I went to college, because I'm elderly, when I went to college,
yeah.
The Riverside went out of business when I got to college, and
Oh, wow. The
entire catalog was in the campus store for $1.98 each.
Oh my god, that's incredible.
It was incredible. I didn't have a lot of money to spend on records, though, but I bought whatever I could. I have like bought like 50 of them, but that's all I could afford.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah.
Do you have Black Saint Soul Note records?
I don't. Hold on, you write this down.
That's another great label. These Italian guys started it in the 90s, and they've got, you know, Joe Lovano was on it, and a lot of great artists were on it.
Black Saint Soul Mode?
They have two divisions, Black Saint and Soul Note. There's like two.
Okay.
Yeah, you're finished now. You're finished.
Yeah, what was the other label you said? Because I didn't write it down.
Rare Noise. Yeah,
okay.
Black Saint. Well, Black Saint Soul Note, you know, these are mostly in the 80s and 90s, and when records went away, the distributor called me. He said, you're one of the only guys interested in records anymore, so I've got a bunch of these. I've got almost the whole catalog, one of each that I kept for myself, but I don't want them anymore. You can have them for a dollar a piece. I said, I'll take them.
Wow.
So I got the whole thing. It was great.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway.
Wow.
If I come out there, I'll bring some Black Saint. I'll travel with a few. They're great recordings too.
Yeah, that sounds great. Awesome. I'll check it out for sure.
Do you haunt Discogs or do you avoid that? You're too busy.
No, I do Discogs. I'm way behind, and but I try to do now. But I make sure to enter it into Discogs before I put it on the shelf. But I have a ton of records that aren't entered just because I didn't start doing Discogs until long after I started buying records, and where I would buy like, you know, 50, 60 records on a Carolina Soul auction, and like I just didn't enter it. So I've got a lot of. At some point, I just need to hire a kid to come do it for me, even if I'm not doing the ratings part, but just getting the titles in so I don't double buy.
I don't have any. I don't have my records on Discogs. I just don't. I just haven't had time. But the 15-year-old kid that writes for me has his collection on there, and at some point I'll try to get him to put my collection up there. He'll have more time than I have.
Yeah, exactly. I should just find someone this summer that wants to do it, or, you know, out of school or something.
How much time do you spend in the day on this fetish?
I don't know that. It depends. Like, I've definitely gotten a little better lately. but I, you know, I'm on email lists. And, you know, when an auction from, like Carolina Soul, which is a record store in Durham, they do really great auctions. You know, they kind of just aggregate people's collections. Like, they just announced one yesterday on eBay. You know, I love going to, obviously I haven't been going to record stores as much over the last, you know, 14 months or so. But obviously, you know, one of my favorite things to do is go to a record store, or go to KUSF Rock and Swap. So it just depends. I wouldn't say it's hours a day. You know, I think it's just it's more I might spend. Like, I know this weekend I want to get some record filing done. So that's definitely an intention of mine.
And how do you put your records in outer sleeves to protect the jackets? Do you?
I do.
See, I do.
I
had one time my records are in. I try to keep them in pristine physical condition of the actual records, so they, you know, they're, all my records, even going back to the 60s, are really in great shape. But the jackets, I never paid that much. Unfortunately, I just didn't pay that much attention to the jackets. So one time, Craig, you know Craig Kalman, you still Craig?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, my biggest client, Craig Simon.
Yeah, so Craig came over once, and I could see, you know, he's got two collections, one that's just in storage and one that he plays. And
he's on the Guinness Book.
Yeah, I could see that he looked around, and I could see he tried to hide his shock and disgust, but he couldn't. He could see the split jackets. He could see, it was sad.
Yeah.
But I said, look, the records are perfect. And if I go to a used record store and there's a perfect jacket and the record's trashed, I can get the record for $1 and I can replace the jacket if I need to.
Yep. No, that is true. No, I'm really good about, I mean, I wasn't always, but I'm really good. Almost everything's in sleeves now. I do, you know, I buy, I don't know if it's, if I really need to, but I do a lot of, you know, take the paper, you know, replace the paper sleeve with a, you know, like a big fudge sleeve, you know, like a nicer sleeve. I don't know if that matters.
That does matter. That absolutely matters, okay. I think, because a lot of the paper has acid. There's all kinds of things in the paper, and then every time you take the record out, you scratch it. And the rice paper sleeves, I think, really makes a difference. And what's your cleaning regimen, by the way, as long as we're...
It's been very... not great lately, but I
When you buy a used record, what do you
usually they're clean pretty well where I buy from, but I have an Audiodesk Vinyl Cleaner Pro.
Yeah,
so cool. You know, and it's just, there's nowhere good to keep it near my records, so it's like in one room, and then, you know, so it's sort of like I have to take it out. And so I try to do, you know, is when I start pulling side records, what if I go to play them and they're dirty? And then when I get a fair amount of them, I'll break out the cleaner and just, you know, clean them all at once.
Just make sure you change those rollers enough and make sure you don't leave the fluid sitting in there for, like, I mean, I've been to people's homes where they have the Audiodesk and the rollers are not white anymore. They're like brown and crusty. Yeah. And I say to them, what do you think you're accomplishing by rolling that over your records? Yeah. It's not. Yeah, but they're $400. I go, yeah, but you know.
Yeah, but the machines, you know, expensive to sell. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, thank you for that advice. But yeah, I had a cheaper version of it, you know, initially, and then I was like, you know, I'm just going to upgrade. Like, I want it to be as easy as possible. You know, I had the one where he had to clean one side, then he flipped it over and it cleaned the other, as opposed to this one, which, you know,
as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing like cavitation to clean records. It's huge. It restores records that I thought were uncleanable. But then there's a whole restoration process. You can get the Kermes method. Do you know about that? It's this guy. The machine's only about $800 to $1,000. It's a cavitation machine. It's similar to the Audiodesk, but you have to dry it by hand. But with a microfiber cloth, it's 5 revolutions and it's clean. But if you want to restore a record, like after you clean a record with a machine like that, like the Audiodesk, even though you're drying it, the liquid that you're drying has fluid on it. You know, it's got the not just water, it's got whatever the detergent is that little bottle you pour in, and over time, it builds up in the groove. And this guy's shown microscopy to show that it gets built up in the groove. And if you go through his whole process, which could take up to 20 minutes a record, you can literally unlock all this crap from the grooves and restore the record. And I've done it, like, to my original British Tommy that I have.
Wow.
So we're talking about The Who. And I thought I thought it was just, I bought the track record original in 60, whatever it was. I just thought I played it so many times that it must be wearing out. But no, when I did this process to it, it like came back to life completely. It was like insane.
Wow. All right. That's amazing. All right. Thank you. Yeah.
You won't thank me if you buy one of those machines and start spending 20 minutes going through the whole. You won't thank me. But when you play the record, you probably will halfway in between thanking me and cursing me. But it works.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I've taken a couple of record, like, original vinyl here. You know, they have, like, some very high-end cleaning. You know, they even deworked a record for me. That worked pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, I bought a sealed record at a KSF Rock, and so I can't remember. It was, like, I think it was a heavy pressing of a Traffic album. and I was like, shit, it's totally warped, and I brought it to them, and they did it for me. I mean, granted, I almost paid them as much to dewarp it as I bought the record for, but otherwise I would have just, you know, the record would have been a loss.
There's nothing like the Pink Label Island Traffic albums. Those are like, oh my God, those are just incredible.
Yeah, I came to Traffic late in life. I mean, when I was in junior high, that was the time of like Steve Winwood back in the high life.
Right.
And I grew up listening to classic rock radio, so I listened to, I heard Traffic songs, but I really didn't start buying the records probably until the last 10 years.
Yeah, and they were very jazz, or they were, Jim Capone, those guys were into jazz. Anyway, we could probably talk for hours, and I'm sure you've got a lot to do, and I've got a lot to do. But it was fun catching up with you, and I think readers will enjoy listening to this conversation.
Cool. Well, one thing in which it is certainly not required, but Patrick told me to prepare my 12 favorite records, so I did that.
Okay, yes, and I forgot. So what are they?
All right, they are not in any particular order.
That's
and
okay.
I got to 11, and then there's like a list of... All right, so I will tell you, The Who, Quadrophenia...
Yep.
Nick Drake, Brighter Lighter.
Yep.
Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. 11, Sunday at the Village Vanguard. Thelonious Monk, Alone in San Francisco. Bobby Hutcherson, San Francisco. That's what Harold Land on it. Bob Mould, Workbook. Radiohead, The Bends. John Coltrane, One Down, One Up. Wilco, Summer Teeth. Bill Withers, Live at Carnegie Hall. And for 12th, I'll go with Beastie Boys, Paul's Boutique.
What was that?
Beastie Boys, Paul's Boutique.
Oh, okay.
Although it could have easily been Who's Next or The Kinks, Village Green Preservation Society,
yes,
or James Brown, Love Parfait.
Yeah.
If I wrote this list tomorrow, it might be different.
I get that. I hate lists, actually. But it's kind of fun just so people can understand what your tastes are. I had Ray Davis sign my original British Pie copy of Village Green. That was one of my exciting things in my life. Oh, you should know that Acoustic Sounds is reissuing Kind of Blue again.
Oh, my God.
But it's from the Bernie Grundman mastering from the 90s, because he has the metal parts. So Bernie got the three-track tape, which in 1990, whatever it was still in good shape. He got the original three-track and cut the lacquers directly from the three-track, so there's no mix-down. So it is from the three-track, and he's pressing it on Clarity vinyl in the fine-built hand press, so it's one at a time, like custom press.
Wow.
And I think he's pressed 25,000, and they're all going to sell. They'll be gone quickly.
So yeah, of course.
They just announced it today. You should get one.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Amazing. I didn't know that. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that record, I know it's kind of like the Led Zeppelin 4 of jazz, but... such a great record, it's like, it's just there, I don't, it's a perfect record, there's no two ways about it. Like,
yep.
I can't,
I
always feel like, I don't want to say lame, I always feel like, oh God, am I really going to put Kind of Blue on my favorite? Yes, it's the best, I can't think of a better.
Do you have Gil Evans out of the Cool? Do you like that record?
I do.
That's a great record. And Chaz reissuing that, and they found the tape. I thought the tape had been burnt in the fire, but it wasn't.
No, that's a great record for sure.
Yep.
So I'm going to put it down now, actually. Thank you. I need to decide what I was going to listen to next. Now I know. awesome. Well, so good chatting.
Yes, great chatting with you, too.